One, two, three, four.
Hi, this is Andrew.
And this is Amy. And this week, AADL talks to Ann Arbor illustrator and author Bruce Warden.
Recently, Sherlanya talked with Bruce Warden, whose new children's book, Goodnight Keith Moon, has gotten a lot of buzz. Bruce talks about what inspired the book, his insomnia, his love of The Who, and the endless readings of Margaret Wise Brown's classic bedtime story to his son. He also talks about being a word geek with a love of homophones.
So I've asked you to come here to talk to us a little bit because of your recent book, Goodnight Keith Moon. It's very hard to even say that because you're so used to saying Goodnight Moon.
I know.
Goodnight Moon. I mean, and I tell you what, your book has created a phobia that one day I'm going to be at story time and I'm going to be like, Goodnight Keith. Oh. So will you tell me a little bit about yourself and how did this person who is, you know, out there doing his thing come to write
this
Goodnight
is my thing.
Keith Moon?
My name's Bruce Ward. I am an illustrator. I live here in Ann Arbor. I've lived here basically since I came here for college back in the 90s. And I've done illustration and sculpture work for science museums, and I've done freelance illustration, and right now I've got a sort of a part-time job that pays the bills, and it gives me a little free time to play around with silly ideas, and I've got lots of silly ideas.
So tell me how this Goodnight Keith Moon idea came up. Like,
we had a kid a few years ago, and you end up reading Goodnight Moon a million times to your kid, and it's I think it's a very polarizing book. People either love it or they completely hate it.
And where did you fall?
I actually really like it, but it does put me to sleep, you know, but I kind of think that's the point. It's a very relaxing kind of book, but if you're not reading it at bedtime, it can get a little tiring, you know, because it makes you feel sleepy. So I'd read this book like a million times to my son. And, you know, I was probably listening to The Who earlier that day. And it just sort of mashed up together in my sleep-deprived brain one day that Goodnight Moon was kind of like almost like saying goodbye to Keith Moon, kind of like a eulogy to Keith Moon. So it just kind of the title came together. And I didn't think it would go any further than that, really. But bounced the idea off of some people at work, and Claire, my co-writer on this, really picked up on it, and we just sort of, you know, it's just a template, you know, off of Goodnight Moon, so it wrote itself pretty easily. It was basically just filling in the blanks.
So your book has attracted a bit of attention. It looks like Huffington Post reviewed it, The New Yorker reviewed it. And it's going to appear in a pilot episode of a comedy. Is that right?
That's what they say. I'm crossing my fingers that it airs. Yeah.
So what's that like? You know, you have this idea when you're reading to your kid, you bounce the idea off someone, you write it together. And then suddenly it's like, oh yeah, can we show this in our pilot episode?
It's very surprising. Very surprising. We put it up online. Our only intention ever was to do the drawings, write the thing out pretty quickly, and just put it up on the internet just for fun. And I don't know, it sort of ended up with a life of its own, and it surprised us every step of the way. We had to, you know, increase our bandwidth. The site crashed, and, you know, because there were so many people trying to view it. And we've had, you know, before it got published, we had, you know, a few different publishers talk to us about it, you know, and had like thousands and thousands of hits on the YouTube version that we did. And just everything we do has surprised us that people have been interested in it. We've sent it to people have ordered the book who are in like actual rock and roll bands that I've heard of. You know, I've ended up mailing things to people. I'm like, that guy, he's the bass player for such and such.
That's cool.
You know? Yeah. And I don't know, somebody somewhere along the line involved in that TV show liked it, and yeah, I'm really keeping my fingers crossed on that one. That would be cool to see that in a little scene in a TV show.
That's neat. Have you read the book to your son? I saw somewhere that you'd said like I'd read it to him if it were ever in published form, but that,
yeah,
I think
that's
that,
right.
That was before it was
that was before
printed,
I thought it would actually get published.
So now where do you stand on that?
I've not, you know, we've almost kind of gotten past the age of mandatory bedtime stories. So
how'd you manage that?
I don't know. I'm sort of off the hook. I don't know. We just tire him out in other ways, I guess. So I never really read it to him when it was still in its preliminary form. And now that it's, you know, published, he knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he can read. And I think he's read it. But I haven't actually sat down, like, with him on my lap and, like, read it. That just seems kind of self-aggrandizing.
So I spent some time poking around on your website, and I just have to ask you, like, where do your ideas come from? You have, I can tell that some of them seem to be very much linked with the work you've done in the past with, like, mm-hmm. scientific illustration, like, the, you know, where do I fit in one, about the, you know, classification of different animals. It seems like it's very much informed by other work that you've done, but
yes.
Some of the others, it's like, huh, where'd that come from?
Where does anybody get their ideas? Sometimes, seriously, it's you wake up in the middle of the night and something strikes you. I really am convinced that the Goodnight Keith Moon thing just happened because I was so sleep deprived, you know, trying to raise a young kid. So that's, you know, that's the silver lining to that, I guess. Your brain just kind of, you just put things together. I don't know. I think most of the ideas that I've got are usually sort of stem from other ideas. It's usually putting a couple of different things together, you know. Like right now I'm working on this one that puts zombies into the Woodstock concert. So it's just sort of, it always, in my mind anyway, it seems like it's two things that sort of already existed. That one's very obvious. Two things that already existed, and you just sort of piece them together. But sometimes they don't seem that obvious to other people that it, you know, I feel like I don't always come up with the most original ideas. I'm just sort of putting the pieces of my life together in different ways.
It's neat. So now that you have a book out there, published paper book out there in the world, does everyone, you know, ask you your opinion about the future of the book?
I do get that a little bit, yeah.
So what is your response
to that?
Yeah,
it seems weird because, you know, it's sort of been a lifelong dream to have a book, you know? Like, hey, I wrote a book. Yeah, I've got a book published. That's great. But it seems almost pointless now, doesn't it? Like, unless it's going to be the very last book, you know? Like, oh, I had the very last book ever published. It almost seems kind of pointless. I really don't know what's going to happen. I think that, you know, books and websites and apps and all the new media stuff, I think it can all work together. But I think when it gets right down to it, books are just going to cost too much to print. And that seems to be the driving factor in any decision, really, almost any decision these days, you know, is how much is it going to cost me? And even if it doesn't cost too much, if it costs more than something else, if it costs more than just putting up a website, the company's going to go with the website. So I think the book industry, it looks bleak, but I don't know that necessarily means that literature is going to die or anything. It's just, we're just going to have to get used to reading it in different ways.
Do you get tired of that question?
I don't get tired of it. I wish I had a better answer for it. I'm not very good at predicting the future.
Neither am I. I think it's fantastic, fascinating to ask other people that and see what they come up with.
I think some people, you know, really sit down and think about that kind of thing more. I just don't have time to sit down and think.
These days. Like, my sleep-deprived brain is too busy coming up with
ideas. Yeah, I feel like I used to sit down and think of things a lot more. We used to have a whole bunch of crazy ideas. We used to have a notepad that we'd keep for, you know, we used to make little short films and things. We had a notepad. It's actually still in our kitchen, but we haven't written in it in years and years and years. Just movie ideas, little short film ideas. So the ideas are not flowing as fast as they used to.
So tell me a little bit about your current project, Homophones Weekly.
Yeah, well, actually, this kind of almost ties into what you're saying about the book industry. You know, I do feel like as newspapers crumble and books aren't sold and therefore aren't published as much, and therefore, it all gets wrapped up into, you know, what we're willing to accept as far as the English language. What we're willing to accept it being printed like, and how we can read it and how we can understand it and all that. And suffice it to say, I've always misspellings are sort of a pet peeve of mine. Like if I see a book and there's a word misspelled, and I don't like blow my top or anything, but you know, it's amazing to me that like a book can get printed. And there's copy editors, and there's editor editors, and there's the author, and you know, and how do you misspell things? How does that get through? You know, and now that newspapers are horrible. I mean, no, I don't know. Maybe I was going to say no offense to newspapers, but I don't think that's true. I think maybe I am meaning a little offense here. Have you read like newspapers lately? They're awful. I mean, you can't read an article without like some serious typographic errors. And it bugs me. So, but rather than just sit back and sort of complain about it like an old man, I decided that the only thing I could do would be to maybe find a new way to address that issue. And it's, okay, so anyway, that's the long, I'm answering your question, but it's taking a long time. Sorry. The Homophones Weekly is my website where I take words that are spelled differently, but are two separate words that sound the same, like meat and meat, as a simple example. So these are the words that would get past your spell check if you were writing a story and you didn't care enough to learn how to spell what you were writing about and you just relied on your spell check. Your spell check wouldn't pick it up because they both spell completely proper words, but they just don't mean the same thing. So I draw just little pictogram pictures, sort of safety warning label type black and white icon type drawings to sort of help define each word. And I just put them side by side. So meat, M-E-A-T on the left and like a little sort of iconic chunk of meat. And then on the right, M-E-E-T. And people maybe, I try to relate them to one another. So maybe it would be two people meeting over dinner and they'd be eating the meat that was on the previous one. I don't know. It's just I know that visual learning can help people who have a hard time learning in other ways. And so, you know, maybe that's all it is. I don't want to just sit back and complain, nobody knows how to spell nothing these days. You know, that's something that I hear too much of. And I figure the least I could do is maybe try to find a new way to approach it. So that's all it is. And I do a new one each week and try to keep the drawings fairly simple. And I don't know. I always thought that would make an interesting book too, and it wasn't really going anywhere. And I thought, well, I could have a few samples and try to pitch it to publishers, or I could actually do one every week. And by the time someone wants to make it into a book, maybe I'll have all the work done, you know? So, and it's been fun. I've been, you know, chatting with people, leave comments on it, and we bring up some other grammatical issues and things.
How do you choose which words you're going to do? Do you have like a list of pet peeves? Like, do you have like a hierarchy? Like, this is the one that bugs me the most, and this is the one that I'm getting cleared out today.
I have a list of like 200.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
They're called homophones. That's right. The kind of word. That's what, yeah. I've got a list of 200 of these pairs, and I, like every day if I think of one, or every time I think of one, or if someone suggests one to me, I add it to the list. So it grows and it grows and it grows. And I, this is just dorky. I can't believe I'm explaining this. I color code the Excel file that they're in. It's actually a Google spreadsheet. I color code it based on ones that are, I think, easily mistaken for one another.
Mm-hmm.
I think meat and meat is not a good example. I think most people could distinguish the difference between meat and meat, but accept and accept. You know, I think people just sort of will whip past that and not really realize that they're spelling it wrong. You know, meat and meat is a pretty easy one. Bear and bear is a pretty easy one, you know, but sometimes there's things.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of bear.
Yeah. But you know, there's other ones, imminent and imminent, you know, things that are just a little less, words that are less commonly used, but when you try to use it, you might misspell it and not realize that you're actually spelling a different word. So I color code those and try to address some of those. And then also ones that I think will make interesting pictures. So I do have sort of a hierarchy, but it's not usually ones that really bug me. Everyone wants me to do it's and it's, and two, two, and two is the other one that everyone wants me to do. I've definitely done one that I hadn't thought of that a friend spelled wrong on like a Facebook post or something, you know, And when I corrected it like a jerk, she was like, oh, you're going to do this one next? And I ended up, I did do it. And I, you know, dedicated it to her.
It's hilarious. So what's next for you? What are you going to work on next?
I've got so many things next, and none of them are actually getting any real traction yet. So I don't know. I will work on next, whatever someone pays me to work on next. But I've got, I really want to do the Zombies at Woodstock story. So I've started writing it. I think it would make a fantastic comic book. But I've come to find out that as much as I am an illustrator, I think comic book illustrating is too much for me. I don't think I have the time right now that it takes to sit down and do that all by myself. So I'm going to need to find some help, you know, starting and finishing that. So I've got the Zombies at Woodstock. I've got the picture book you mentioned earlier is called What About Me, that I think really should be made. Should get published somewhere. It's about animal classification. It's like a picture book for kids. It's written in rhyme. It's pretty fun, I think. Everybody who I've shown it to has really seemed to like it, but the picture book industry in particular is really hard right now. You know, it's hard to get publishers to take a risk on somebody who isn't very well known. And I'm hoping that Goodnight Keith Moon gets me a little more well known, gets me another job or two, and then maybe I'll have a little more leeway to suggest, like, hey, let's do this one next, instead of sort of trying to hustle. I'm writing a screenplay right now that I think is going to be fantastic, but that's like even more in a realm that I'm not very familiar with how to sell it. So lots of little ideas that I'm putting out there through my agent. So if any of them get nibbles, they'll go to the top of the list. You know?
Well, that's a smart way to figure out going to the top.
I'm working on one right now, actually, that I'm hoping will be next. It's really nice. It's this old 19th century poetic form, the villanelle.
You probably know
about the villanelle. Yeah. It's about a frog that has to cross a road during mating season. His hormones get the best of him. It's a tragic. It's a tragic tale, and
see, that's another one that I read. I looked when I was poking around on your website. I read it, and it made me laugh, and then I felt bad about myself. I felt like I should not have been laughing about that.
I think it's dark humor, right? So I'm doing the drawings for that right now, actually.
What made you go with an old school form poem as a mm-hmm. writer who writes poetry and writes form poetry, among other poets? Sometimes they're like, really? You're a Sestina? For real? Why are you doing that? It's interesting to me.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the things that stood out to me most about that. I was like, he wrote a villanelle? That's so cool. And then it was like, why did he write a villanelle?
I'll tell you why I wrote a villanelle. I know this is an answer that I had sat up thinking about. Like, I know exactly why. This is the thing. Like, and you know this as a poet, like, poems have different feelings. There's different types of poems for different things, you know? And I think sonnets are beautiful and limericks are funny. But when you're obsessing over something, you go to the villanelle. That's an obsessive poem right there. It just repeats and it won't let go. And it just, you take those lines and you repeat them and you switch them and you move them, but you just keep hammering it. So when you've got something to say, something on your mind,
like a frog in mating season,
exactly, you go straight to the villanelle. And I work best in some sort of structure. I'm not a very free form sort of writer, so I like having a little structure there to fall into. And so I think a nice dark obsessive tale is very well told in a villanelle.
Yeah.
For more information on Bruce Worden, visit sketchsketchsketch.com.
Music for this episode was Pumpkin Boil by Mark Boole and the Habadudes, which you can find on the AADL catalog by going to aadl.org/magnitude.
You've been listening to AADL Talks to Bruce Worden.